to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Katie Davis. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you
here.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. So just a little introduction. Children's author and illustrator Katie Davis has published 10 books and appears monthly on the ABC affiliate show Good Morning Connecticut, recommending great books for kids. She produces Brain Burps about books, a podcast about Kidlit, a blog and a regular newsletter, and she's all over the internet. So that pretty much sums it up, Katie.
Okay, bye.
No, but what impresses me about you is, you know, how much you do all over the place. But let's start with a bit more about your story. So how did you get into writing kids' books and also illustrating? Because, you know, it's a pretty different skills.
Yeah, and I actually have much less confidence in my illustration than I do in my writing. Mm-hmm. Because I was not a great student. I didn't like being in school. I don't like studying. I don't like, you know, like most kids, I don't like studying for things I'm not passionate about. But I love writing. I love reading. And I was always confident in that. And if I ever had a math, forget it. Don't even talk to me about math. Miss Twilliger put me in the corner in first grade when I couldn't do a math problem, and it was downhill from there. And that Miss Twilliger, she's going to show up in a book one day. And I just decided that, you know, whenever I knew I could raise up my grades through writing or my English classes, I would do that. So when I got out of college, I knew I needed to get a job. I had no idea what to do. I didn't even know you could be a writer as a job. That's just too good to be true. And it was a long time. I was just about 40 before my first book came out. Oh. And so it's been a while. So that was the start of it. I started in writing businesses, various different businesses, advertising, things like that, and marketing. And so, which is where I get the marketing chops. And so I just kept going into it. And the illustration came from, I was always sort of artsy fartsy. but I never, ever considered myself an artist. And then somewhere in my 20s, I started doing more and more art and feeling more and more confident about it because I started selling it. And that's when, in my late 20s, I started supporting myself through my art. And despite that, I still had less confidence in my artistic abilities. And I still look at other people, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that. My girlfriend, my friend Janie Bynum, who's an amazing artist, and she can doodle perspective. And I'm like, wow, I wouldn't have thought of doing it from above. But now I'm starting to see things, and I've really been educating myself. And starting with my book, Kindergarten Rocks, which is behind me. I don't know if you can see it. But with that one, if you look at that book, even though it's crayoned, it's much more sophisticated in its perspectives and the composition than my first book, Who Hops, was, which was straight on, flat, like this, which was coincidentally very good for that particular book because it's a very young picture book, and it was perfect for what the story was. Mm. So, you know, you have to think, well, what is the story and what you're going to draw? And I think I just went way over my time limit.
No, that's fantastic, because what you've kind of indicated is that, you know, it's not like you went to school to do children's writing and children's illustrating. Yeah, you just kind of got into it over time, which is fantastic. So if people want to write kids' books, you know, in terms of the writing side, what would be sort of your number one recommendation? Like, do they need to have kids? Do they need to think like a kid? What would you say?
Marie Sendak didn't have kids. Peggy Rathman doesn't have kids. There are plenty of people who don't have kids. But here's the one thing everybody has in common. We were all kids. One thing you do need to have on your resume to write for children, you were once a child. So you're good to go. And you have to remember, the one thing I really find a lot of beginners do, well, actually, there are two things. One is people think that they should write in rhyme, and I would advise against that, because people tend to forget about the story in the rhyme. They work so hard to try to jam things into the rhyme that the tail is wagging the dog. And so I would say forget or do it in rhyme if you want to, but then try to rewrite it out of rhyme. And if the story still holds up, then maybe we can talk. The second thing is they try to teach a lesson. And that's a big, big thing. And that's a big, big no-no. Now, you can teach a lesson if you're not hitting them over the head with, here's the lesson. And you and little Peggy was sad because, you know, her friend's mother died. So what did she do? She learned about death and, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, for example, I have a book called Mabel the Tooth Fairy and How She Got Her Job. And it didn't occur to me until afterwards that basically I'm telling kids, make sure you take care of your teeth or they're going to fall out of your head. But that is never once part of the way I'm telling it. It's about the tooth fairy and why she started collecting teeth, and because she didn't take care of her teeth and they fell out of her head and she had to figure out how to get some teeth back, and so she started collecting them, the whole thing. And so it's very funny, and it's not the focus, but what do kids get out of it? Oh, sheesh, I better go brush my teeth. I don't want to end up like that.
No, that's fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things I'd heard is that you mustn't talk down to kids of any age. Like, you have to assume they're more intelligent than you think they are. Is that right?
Well, they are more intelligent than we think they are. Smart, actually. And, I mean, if you look at any of the books that are huge, traditional publishing, and in traditional publishing, and just huge, like, you know, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, or any, you know, in picture books at least, it's really, really, you'll see that people aren't talking down to them. And that is what kids will relate to. And don't be afraid to use big words. And don't, I remember there was also a moment when I was editing, I think it was, Kindergarten Rocks, where you have to remember to talk, you could talk like kids, but you don't want to do baby stuff. So, it is in Kindergarten Rock, where the kid says, and the cafeteria is practically almost like a restaurant. And my editor at the time said, practically almost like a restaurant doesn't make sense. No, you know, that's not, I said, yeah, but a five-year-old would say that. Hmm. And in excitement, it's practically almost like a restaurant. I mean, it sounded so real to me. And that's also something very important. And you want to make it sound like a child. You don't want to go over a five-year-old would say, like, I propose that a cafeteria may be technically not actually real, but you would never say that, right? But some people still may go over their heads in terms of what a five-year-old would say, mm-hmm. unless you have a brainiac kid and that is the whole point. And that could be funny, and you can make that funny. You also don't want to go below. Mm-hmm. So it's a hard line. It's a very hard thing to write for kids, but it's fun. It's so rewarding.
Mm. Yeah, and I wonder about how long it takes as well, because, you know, people are like, well, of course it takes longer to write a 100,000-word novel than it does to write, like, a 10,000-word kids book. What's the kind of process, especially when you're illustrating your own?
Well, when you're illustrating your own, it definitely takes longer because you're, you know, you're doing this, right? But I do think I have many novelist friends who say, oh, I would never write a picture book. I could never do it. And they've written, you know, 200-page books or whatever, 200, I don't know how long. But they, but on the other hand, a lot of people do think, oh, well, it's only a couple of words, then how long could it take? But if you only have a couple of words on the page, you better make sure the choice that you've made are the right couple of choices of words, right? So it depends on you. Some books have taken me a lot longer than other books. It depends on the book. So lately I've been getting a lot of rejections. Rave rejections. But it's, you know, and everybody gets them. I mean, I've sold a ton of books and I still get rejections. So, you know, I keep working on those books. So those books have been, you know, works in progress for years and years because I just keep honing and whittling and editing and in between my other projects, you know, just constant. So
yeah,
it can take a long time, just depends.
So it's interesting. So you've mentioned traditional publishing. How hard is it? Because I have heard that it's extremely hard to get a kid's book published because they're so expensive because of the colour, and like picture books are often, the paper is thicker, they're expensive books to publish. So what is the market like right now in traditional publishing, and what do you think about self-publishing for this age group?
Well, my opinion of self-publishing has changed as most people's has changed. The people in traditional publishing have, the opinion now is a lot different than it was. Before it was, self-publishing, you know. And now people, first of all, are realizing, I need to get an editor. I need to do this right if I'm going to sell. Because there's sure, you can just put anything out. But if you really do want to be a writer and if you take your craft seriously, you will do it right. And it's expensive. I mean, I published, you know, how to create your children's, I mean, how to promote your children's book. And I spent over $1,000 between editing and all that stuff and copy editing. So it's a very expensive proposition. And that's one reason it's great to publish with a traditional publisher. And another reason it's not is because you lose control. You and I spoke about this when I interviewed you. And as far as getting traditionally published, if you do want to get traditionally published, I highly recommend you learn how it works. You know, it's not like, well, it's like any business. You know, if you want to write a screenplay, you would write it in a certain format. You wouldn't just, you know, write it in pencil on a legal pad, right? There's a format. There's an acceptable traditional business format. Same with picture books. Same with how you submit them and promote them and all that stuff. So there is the Society of Children's Book Illustrators, at Writers and Illustrators, scbwi.org. That's one organization people can join. There's also Children's Book Insider, which you can go to katieloves.me/bookworms. And check that out. And it's really inexpensive to join. There are a lot of different resources. Right now, if you're into picture books, because, you know, all the way up through middle grade and young adult, picture books, there's an organization called 12 by 12. So Julie's group is called 12 by 12. And she started it last year for 12 by 12 in 2012. And people would, it's a whole community. It's amazing, loving, supportive, incredible community of people who wanted to write picture books. And they wrote one a month, a draft, you know. So people came out of the year with 12 picture book drafts. Some would write six and then just really hone those over the 12 months. But whatever it was, it created an incredible community. There's a Facebook page and the whole thing. Now she has started 12 by 12 in 2013. And you can get to the link by going to katieloves.me/12x12. 12x12.
Right. Fantastic. Okay. So that's brilliant. And I guess, you know, moving on from that. So, I mean, obviously you're doing the, you know, we talked about how expensive it is to do the print book. So what is happening with digital and kids books? Because I've read that maybe Apple is the place to be. Or so what do you think about ebooks for kids, especially in that young age group that you're talking about?
Right. Well, you know, again, I hate to, you know, bring up Julie again. I love to bring up Julie and she's great. But she wrote an incredible article for Writer Unboxed. Do you know that site?
Yeah.
She wrote this wonderful article and I'm going to quote from it because she is more of an expert than I. And she wrote about the terminology. And the terminology is really important because you need to differentiate between book apps and ebooks and storybook apps. And it's a very big difference. And so I was hoping to educate your followers because, okay, here we go. This is right from the article. An ebook is an electronic version of a print book or a book composed and published electronically with minimal interactive elements. Okay. And an ebook is great for Kindle, which is the Amazon format. Okay. And because you could do a young adult or a middle grade if you're just doing text or a few illustrations, still illustrations, and that is the leader there. But if you're doing picture books, Apple is the place to go. And so you could do an enhanced ebook, and her definition is an ebook that contains much of the same written content as print books and standard ebooks, but also includes extra material such as audio or video similar to the bonus features of a DVD. Mm-hmm. Then you have a book app, a book that requires the reader to interact with the story in order for it to proceed. Also, it includes non-linear interactivity, ideally designed to enhance the narrative. That's a really important point. It shouldn't be there because it can move, you know. It should enhance narrative. Interactive components can include sound sprites. I love that. Animation, illustration, music, virtual or augmented reality scenes, and more. And a storybook app, the last thing, is for illustrated book apps geared for young children that include animation and other interactive elements similar to picture books. And it's really so exciting, you know, places we can go. And one thing I want to tell your people is about this really cool thing. I'm turning one of my books into something. I don't know what it's going to be. I'm just trying to get the art done, and then I'll worry if it's going to be a storybook app or an app or whatever. But It's called, if you have an iPad and you can do art, or you want to create art and you want to put it, you make a book for iTunes to be sold in iBookstore. It's called Book Creator, and it's a very inexpensive app that allows you to bring your art in and create a digital book, mm-hmm. for your book. And it's like $7 or something. And I can get you the link. It's really fabulous. Mm. I'll give you the link after we're done. Mm. But it's really, I'm doing it slowly, but we'll see what happens.
So do you, I mean, and then, because you recommend books and you know the market, are people buying these apps? Like, is this a growing market, or will kids' books stay print?
I think there's room for storytelling everywhere. You know, I do not think that there is going to be the death of the book. I think in 200 years, who knows what's going to happen? You know, it's snowing in Arizona right now, so who knows? 50 degree weather over the weekend in New York. So I do believe that. There's always going to be a picture book. There's always going to be cuddle time to read a book. It's not quite the same thing. I mean, I've got kids, they're grown, you know, getting teenagers. And so it's not like I grew up in the digital age. Mm. However, so like a kid who's born now, like my niece, she could grow up and think it's great to cuddle up with an iPad. I don't know. I don't. I want to see the page turn. I want to, you know, but my daughter's 16 and a half, and she won't read a book on a device. She wants to read a book. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But for now, in our lifetime, I don't think picture books are going anywhere.
Mm, no, fantastic. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted just to ask you quickly about getting an illustrator. So you did mention the illustrator's market, but if people want to find an illustrator, how do they do that?
I again have some great links for your peeps. First of all, there's always places like Odesk and Elance and stuff like that, but for a particular, where is this link? The particular... have it right here. Here it is. So I love this site. I haven't put my own stuff on it because I don't have time to illustrate for other people, but there are so many beautiful illustrators there, or illustrations. The illustrators themselves I cannot vouch for. But the childrensillustrators.com. Very, very nice, beautiful stuff. People hire out. They are also the sponsors of the Bologna Children's Book Fair, as well as London Book Fair. There's also hireanillustrator.com. That also gorgeous illustrations. And don't forget, you know, you can look and look and look. And I would also advise you, if you have no experience with illustration, you're not an artist, you don't really know what's good or what's bad, go to look at some of the books that have won Caldecott's. The Caldecott is for illustration. So if you look at something and you find somebody, you're not going to be able to hire a Caldecott illustrator. However, you might find a style that you like. Mm. And at least you'll know that that's a style and that is respected. And I don't know. It's an idea. It's just a way to sort of give you a little flashlight in the dark if you have no idea about illustration. You might just want to go with what you like. But the reason that having an editor is so brilliant is because they know what kind of illustration should go with a particular style of story. And you being the mama or the papa of the story, you are going to have some prejudice about what you think. You've had this vision, right? Mm. And an illustrator may have a completely different vision. And my example I give is you have a writer who's written a book called The Normal Boy. And it's about some kid in the suburbs in a development, right? And you send it off to the illustrator, and the illustrator reads it and thinks, oh, this is great, and sends you back a manuscript with illustrations of a normal boy who lives in the suburbs, who lives in a development on Mars. So, you know, a little Martian boy. He's a normal Martian boy, but he's a Martian boy. So completely different story all of a sudden. Mm. And forget too, it ain't your book anymore. This is a team sport. Writing books, if you're doing it with other people. If you have any input, it's team sport. And you have to assume that everybody wants the best for this baby. You know, the illustrator's not going to put in all that time and not want it to sell really well. Mm. So that's my little soapbox.
No, that's great. And I don't have a clue because I'm not in this market at all. But how much would you expect to pay for an illustrator? Like, what would be the range?
I have no idea. And the reason I have no idea is because it will depend on where the person lives, how many pages in your book. In a traditional picture book, there are 32 pages. So, you know, an ebook doesn't have to be 32 pages. So there's so many different, is there going to be moving parts? Is there going, you know, what is involved? The illustrations may be simple. You know, and I know people who draw very simple drawings that has nothing to do with how long it takes and whether it's worth more or less than somebody who paints in oils, you know, I don't know. But it's really, and it also depends on how well an illustrator's books might have done before. So there are all of those different kinds of moving parts, if you will, for what goes into pricing. And also it's what an illustrator wants to charge. So if you don't like it, don't pay it, find another one. There are a ton of illustrators and they all want work.
Yeah. No, that's what I was expecting, really. I mean, it's hard. It's with artwork particularly, it's extremely hard.
It's very
So I guess the best advice for people is to, if they engage somebody with a happy quote, that they check the first illustration that they do to make sure it matches their vision.
Well, you know, there is the book called, I think it's called the Artists and Graphic Guide. It's basically a guideline. I have it somewhere. If you want to hold on, I can show it. I have an old copy. It's a guide. It's an annual guide. And it's a guide to what people should charge. That's for illustrators, but people who want to hire somebody can also look in it and see what kind of agreement, written agreement. And absolutely, you should have a written agreement on both sides, whether you're the illustrator or the writer. You should absolutely have a written agreement stating, you know, delivery dates, what you expect, what kind of format you need it in. If somebody gives you something, they're not experienced, then they give you something that isn't printable or depend. And you think you're going to be doing an ebook and you get something that is great for web, but you can't print it because it will pixelate and look like, you know, caca once it goes onto a paper. So you have to really make sure that you're covering all the bases with that. If you have somebody who is going to provide you with vector art, which is done with an Illustrator or something like that, that means that you can reduce or enlarge it with no change to the quality. Whereas something done in Photoshop, for example, will pixelate and get all bit, you know, edgy and bitmapped. So it really depends. It's a lot. I know.
Yeah.
I know people listening to this are like, oh my gosh, my head is going to explode. But you do have to educate yourself. It's your responsibility. And this is just, I'm kind of giving you a quick overview of what is out there. And I do have a lot of information on my site and in my podcast, but it's really, it is something that you're going to have to go to multiple sources and do read the FAQs on these illustrator sites too.
Mm, no, fantastic.
Yeah, I wonder if... I'm guessing, I'm betting that they must have guidelines on what kind of agreements that you could create for working together, because they want you to have a good experience. Because if you don't, you're not going to be going back to that website.
No, exactly. And with the online world now, people get recommendations. You can't screw up or your business is over. But let's talk about your latest book for adults, which is How to Promote Your Children's Books, Tips, Tricks, and Secrets to Create a Bestseller, which I know everybody will want to hear about. So my first question, and I get it all the time, is do kids authors market to kids or adults?
Well, it depends. It's interesting. It depends what age your readership is. This book is to adults, as you said. And most of the advice I give in it is about establishing your platform and how to do that. And I mean, you have done this brilliantly. I give you as an example all the time. And I do, I really do, because I've watched you skyrocket. It's really exciting to me to see somebody do this, a writer, and independently. It's wonderful. My congratulations, seriously.
Oh, thank you.
But I, you know, if you are, for example, here's a perfect example. Just this morning in the New York Times, and I don't know him personally, but John Green is a writer who writes for young adults, right? Yeah. And he wrote The Fault in Our Stars and a whole bunch of stuff. And he is hugely popular. One reason is because he has created, and it wasn't his, I mean, people call him a brilliant marketer, but he's really a brilliant writer. And he started this video log. He calls himself the Vlog Brothers, V-L-O-G, with his brother Hank. And they decided in 2007, it went in the Pleistocene era or whatever, that and he, you can tell I'm not a scientist, they decided to communicate only through a video a day, and they put it online, and they got this huge following. And just this past week, they ostensibly were celebrating the one-year anniversary of The Fault in Our Stars, but what they did was sold out Carnegie Hall. And huge, huge, huge numbers of his fans, teenagers mostly, went and was like a variety show. And in the New York Times, it said it was like a really good high school variety show. And so he is marketing to his constituency, to the kids, because they make money in their jobs or wherever or however they say, "Mom, give me money," or whatever it is. My kids do that, and they'll buy their books or they'll go to the library or whatever. Whereas somebody like me, I only have one novel for kids, and most of my books are picture books, which of course the people with the wallets are the adults, and not the, you know, 4-year-olds. So they will go, and I market more to them. But I really, my career has sort of veered, and I'm now working with so many writers and illustrators and teachers and librarians is mostly my niche, that to help them create their platform and help them expand their reach. So I've done that with my career, and it was sort of just because I was having fun doing it, and then I suddenly realized people were coming to me for my expertise, and that's when I wrote the book. It's like, okay, I'm going to share this, I'm going to help other people.
No, I think that's fantastic. We're going to come back to some of those points. But just back on, so marketing to, say, the parents and grandparents of 4-year-olds, for example, what's the best way? I mean, is it like mummy blogs? Is it review sites? You know, do you have like a, you know, best place to start?
There are many best places, I think. I mean, the mommy blog's great. That's great. But I would never, ever, ever just go to a blog and go, oh, this is good. Oh, would you do da 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 da? You have to really, you know, I really love reciprocity. I love helping other people and watching it come back to me. I mean, it's what I call being selfishly unselfish. I love the feeling of helping other people. I love the feeling of promoting other people. But hey, look what happened. The silver lining is that people started noticing my work because. And that's why the book sells, because they want to help themselves, but it also, it helps them. So it's a lovely cycle. It's not a vicious cycle. So I help somebody else and they're like, oh, you know who helped me? Katie Davison. Somebody comes back to me and hires me as a consultant. So it goes like that. And it's, I enjoy it. So it's, and I think that's what you have to do. You can't just, you know, dive bomb a popular blog because it's popular and go, hey, here's my book. You need to be a fan of the thing and tell people about it and be involved and connect and communicate. This is a huge community thing, you know, and you know, go on Twitter, retweet other people, follow people, engage. It really is about engagement, and it is not about shoving your book in people's faces. And if you do that, you will go down in flames and so will your book. I guarantee you. That's the only guarantee I could really give.
And just back on traditional publishing, I mean, most adult authors, you know, authors for adults are kind of told, yep, you do need a platform in order to get a deal or whatever. Is that true for children's authors as well now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, because you never know. I mean, I remember being in marketing in my early days and saying to my boss, well, they're paying us all this money to promote them, but how do we tell if it's working? And she said, you never tell. You can never know. Maybe what you're doing is doing, that's why you better enjoy what you're doing. That, because you're, and you do see results. I mean, when it's spectacular and something happens, like with John Green, and I just interviewed a guy named Adam Rubin who wrote Your Stupid, Stupid Decision to Go to Grad School, which is an adult, obviously, you know, a grad school age book. But I interviewed him because of Video Idiot Bootcamp, my course that I'm about to launch. And because he created this video, it's called The Grad School Rap. It's so funny. And the New York Times saw it and did an article on it. Oh. And it became huge, and he's selling, he sold hundreds and hundreds of copies of his book because of that. Mm. And so if you create videos, that's one way, I believe, that's really the key way I think that people need to be promoting themselves. What you're doing with the video interviews, I wasn't doing video interviews, I was doing other kind of interviews, and I did some, but after you interviewed, after I interviewed you and I did a video, I was like, why aren't I doing this? I'm following Joanna's advice. Her example. So, and see, I mean, everybody's always learning from each other. And so you helped me with that.
Mm. Oh, fantastic. Well, like, you know, it's just another way people can find you, isn't it, really? And, but I have a question on this then, because like you're talking about having fun marketing. And I know there's people going, what did she just say? Like, what does that even mean? Like, so, and I know some people think, yeah, exactly. Some people think marketing is like the worst thing in the world and they hate it and they don't want to be kind of scammy. So how do people enjoy marketing in the way that you do?
Because it's not marketing. It's making friends. You're just talking to people. I have so many friends. My daughter's always like, you don't know, that might be like catfishing. That might be somebody you don't like, because I told her that you and I might get together in London when I go there. And she said, she might be an 85-year-old dirty old man. No, don't meet her. No, I saw her. I saw her. But that's what I mean. I'm like, I make friends. I was so excited to talk to you again, not because you were interviewing me, because I got to talk to you again, you know? And it's, that's the kind of thing it is. It's you, the word marketing is like the word, you're getting a shot. You know, people hear marketing, they think, I have to go get a needle stuck in my arm. No, it's not. It's like, okay, I know this one incredible children's writer named Mitali Perkins, and she created something called Twitter Book Birthday. And so you sign up, and I signed up for the auto because I can't do it all manually. So if I do it automatically, that means that I sign up for Twitter Book Birthday, and every time somebody else who's registered has a book birthday, the day the book is launching, then a tweet comes from me that says, happy book birthday, here's the title, the link, blah, 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 whatever they've put into it, right? Mm-hmm. Then when I have a book come out, everybody tweets me. I mean, I had the most hits on my website the day my book launched because of that. Now, she created that to help other authors. But what happened with her? She got articles. She got and people are grateful to her. That's marketing. It's not a shot. It's not an injection in your arm. It's helping other people and having fun. But that's why I'm saying, do something that's fun. Make videos. Talk. Look at you. This is what you're doing right here is marketing. But are we not having fun?
Yeah, yeah.
and the people who listen to this will, you know, maybe if I'm lucky, they'll come to my site, they'll check me out, or they'll get on my mailing list or whatever. Or people who see it on my site might go to you. And it, again, reciprocity. Mm-hmm. And it's all about just helping each other out and being supportive.
I want to ask you then about video, because you've mentioned it and you know that you love video and you've got this course coming out. You know, how can an author of a kid's book, let's say a kid's picture book, how would they use video? Because like I know John Green, he's like hilariously funny, and him and his brother, they're all like young adult, haha, really rude and, you know, bums and things. We're not all like them. How do you suggest an author might use a video?
Oh, there's so many ways.
And give us one.
This is one. Interviewing other people. Learning from other people. This is a video right here. Boom. How much tech do you need to know? Nothing. You go on Skype. You click record. You maybe use ScreenFlow and you click record, or maybe you, there's a lot of different things you can, use QuickTime and do it for free. You can record your screen. So there's a lot of different ways you can do that. That's one. Okay. You said only one, and I'm going to try to stick to instructions.
Okay. Give us another one then.
There are great animation sites. There's Powtoon. Powtoon.com is great. In fact, I just have to say, because I'm excited, but I am doing a style for them. You create style, you can see it on my website, but you create style animation using these different styles. And it's really, really cool. And I love it so much. I approached them and said, I want to make a style for you. And they're like, okay. So that's why that's happening. Or there's GoAnimate. GoAnimate's fantastic. And all of these have, they have usually trial or free lower level memberships if you want. There are so many ways to do this. You can do FAQs, video FAQs. You should have a welcome video on your website. Eye-to-eye contact is very powerful. I mean, right now I keep trying to look into my camera because it means I'll be looking at you, but it's hard because your face is down there. So put your face up there. Maybe I can, I can't get it any higher. But, it's eye-to-eye contact. It's you're seeing the person. You're not getting catfished, So.
No, I agree with you. But I guess what you've also said there with the animation is people don't have to put their face on video, because I know people are scared of that.
They are, and they shouldn't be. It does not matter what you look like. It does not matter how, if your hair is combed great, perfectly, if you have your lipstick on or whatever. It doesn't matter. If you're vain, I understand. I totally get you. I'm right there with you. But what's important is connecting. You can't hide forever. You wouldn't go to a cocktail party and go hang in the closet, right, and just talk to people through the door. That's what doing video through something where they're not seeing your face might feel like to people after a while. You want to let people know what you look like and hi and how are you, and you're not going to get judged. Who cares?
Who cares? I think that's the point. Yeah, and the people who connect with you will stay, and the people who don't will leave.
You want them anyway.
Yeah.
You don't want them anyway.
Okay, Katie. Well, look, that's all been brilliant. But you have loads of stuff on your site. So maybe you can just tell us a bit about your podcast and your site and what people can find where you live online.
Okay, so my website is katiedavis.com. And if you want to get info right now, at this moment in time, it is just the sign up for info period for Video Idiot Bootcamp. And you can go to videoidiotbootcamp.com and just sign up for info. And my podcast is, you can find it on my website. It's Brain Burps About Books. You can go to iTunes. It's free. Or you can go straight to brainburpsaboutbooks.com. And that is on my website, but it's all the archives of the show. So it's all for helping writers. And I think a lot of it would translate for your people to adult writers. And there's a lot independent of so many. I have over, I just did 126, number 126. So there's a lot to choose from.
There is. And I think that's a good point, though, is that a lot of these things are exactly the same. This whole platform thing, it's the same tools, the same techniques, just a different market, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. It's absolutely the same. Mm-hmm. It's whether you are writing for adults or for children or for, Martians, it doesn't matter. You need to communicate, you need to connect, if the people are only interested in nonfiction. There are plenty of things you can do videos on teaching nonfiction. Oh, for example, the guy that I interviewed that I told you, the grad and stupid decision, his wife wrote a book called How to Tutor Your Own Child. And I said, well, why isn't she making videos? And he said, oh, no, well, there's nothing she can really do. I was like, what are you talking about? Once a week, you do Tutoring Tip Tuesdays. Put a one-minute tip up every Tuesday and say, if your child has special needs, then when they say, whatever her tips are, and when you have math and your kid doesn't like math, blah, 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 and she connects, and there's more in my book. And yes, of course, you are selling your book, but you're helping people too. You are giving free information. And the more free information you give, the more you have a chance of earning it back with people's trust and their loyalty, and eventually, hopefully, they'll buy some of your products too, which is good for both of you, because hopefully, that you're making products that are going to help the people who are following you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was brilliant, Katie. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much. And thanks to your people for listening and watching.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.